If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
We want to find tenants that the internet and Amazon can't replace that we think will be here for decades.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Alan Fruitman is the president and managing broker of 1031tax.com and the author of the Triple Net Property book. He helps investors purchase triple net property. Alan is a buyer's broker, not a seller's broker, just a buyer's broker, and not just a buyer's broker. He's the best buyer's broker in the country for triple net properties. If you are interested in learning how to scale your portfolio with triple net property, Alan's the guy to go to. I can't wait to bring you this interview. He gives us a lot of very important nuggets in here, things that we can put into immediate action, as well as where to find a copy of his free book. So that's it. Without further ado, let's jump right in. Alan, welcome to the show.
Sam, thank you. Glad to be here.
Man, it's a pleasure to have you. I'm excited to learn about your business, what you guys do, and how you help investors scale their real estate holdings. So if you can give us just kind of pull back the curtain on your company and how you can help us as investors.
You bet. There's many aspects of real estate to buy. There's retail, there's office, there's land, there's apartments. And I do this little teeny subsect of real estate, which would be single tenant, triple net leased property. They range from McDonald's, Chase Bank, Walgreens, CVS, Home Depot, Taco Bell, Advance Auto Parts or AutoZone. The big national retail players you see when you drive down the street, that's what I help my buyers purchase.
Gotcha. Okay. So if I were looking, let's say I just had a fistful of money and I'm looking for a place to park it and I want little to no management and I really just want to develop a passive income stream in the commercial real estate sector, I would come to you and say, hey, Alan, let's go buy something.
Correct. And more specifically, the leases are usually corporate or if not corporate from a large franchisee. The term would be 10 to 20 years of a primary term plus renewal options. The price point starts at $1 million and goes way up from there. Investors buy these properties because they are looking for long-term passive income. That's the key to this equation. So you get long-term income, you get great tenants, and it's really passive. No roof, no structure, no parking lot, no vacancies, no management. When there's a problem with the property, the tenant takes care of it themselves. It's really the only place where you get 100% sole ownership and long-term passive income.
Right. So these are all, it sounds like these are all pretty much triple net leases that you guys are working with.
The majority are triple net. There's fee simple where you own land and building, and there's ground leases where you own the land and your tenant will build and pay for the physical building on top of your land. And either way, at the end, you own land and building. So there's pros and cons of both, but there's choices that we have within this arena.
Right. Can you talk to us about what triple net is? Can you just quickly define that for us?
Well, different people have different definitions. My definition says truly passive, everything from the roof, the parking lot, the HVAC, electrical, plumbing, any aspect, plus taxes and insurance, of course, in common area maintenance. If there is an adjoining association or if it's an outparcel to a shopping center. But under my definition of triple net, everything from head to toe is covered under the lease and taken care of directly by the tenant.
Okay. How does someone decide what to invest in, first off? And then how are you bringing these deals to those investors? I mean, have you just been in the business long enough that everybody just calls you and says, hey, I've got a McDonald's for sale. Do you want to buy it? Or how does that work? Say I came to you and said, I want to get started. How do we decide what we're going to buy?
So I began this in 1993, and I've sold billions of dollars of these triple net properties. And I really know everybody out there in the industry. I'm a buyer broker, so I only represent buyers. If you call off a website advertisement or any other methodology, the seller's broker is who you speak with, and that broker has a fiduciary relationship 100% with the seller. And their goal is to convince you to buy that specific property, because if you buy something else, they don't get paid. So their obligation is to talk you into or trick you or however they convince you to buy that specific property. As a buyer broker, I represent you. I have hundreds of properties for you to choose from. And owners, developers, and other brokers from around the country send me their properties. My team and I, we pick the best of the best of the best nationwide.
Gotcha. So are you representing more institutional buyers, or are these, you know, I know you said it's a million and up, so you've got to have some reserves to get in this game. Are you representing more single buyers? Are you representing institutions, or what's your typical buyer profile look like?
I do my best not to represent any institutions. The REITs, the pension funds are not where I spend my energy. I work with more mom and pop investors. I'm roughly 50% new investment, and the other 50% 1031 exchange. And if it's a 1031, many clients are coming out of management intensive properties, such as an apartment building, a shopping center, an office building. They want to get out of multiple tenants and short-term leases into one tenant, or maybe a portfolio of individual properties with one tenant. But long-term leases, again, triple net leases where there's no obligations for the landlord.
Right. And these, of course, are all, you know, national credit rated tenants. So, you know, the likelihood that they default on their payments is much lower, I would assume.
Correct. We're strategic within that. You nailed it exactly, Sam. But to dig it a little deeper, we want to find tenants that the internet and Amazon can't replace, that we think will be here for decades. Mm-hmm. And now we're in COVID, so we want to find tenants that are COVID-friendly. For example, a sit-down restaurant is much less COVID-friendly than a restaurant with a drive-thru. So there's strategies we use to hopefully project and predict what will be a necessary use for decades. And within that, every tenant is temporary. They might be there for 20, 30, 40 years, but eventually every tenant vacates. So it's not just the lease and it's not just the tenants. It all comes back to real estate fundamentals of location.
Right. So I want to dig into the finances on this. You know, obviously the lower the risk profile, typically the lower the return. So can you speak to that a little bit?
Great question. The cap rates range from 4% on the low side, and what I show my clients tops out at around 6% cap rate. There's higher cap rate properties out there, but in order to get that higher cap rate, it's too great of a risk for what my clients usually look for. So in answer to your question, 4% on the lower side, 6% on the higher side. And let me share why a cap rate might be lower or higher. There's many, many aspects, but for simplicity, I break it down into three criteria. One is location, two is strength of tenant, and three is length of lease. When all three criteria are prime, again, prime location, A credit tenant, long-term lease, that's your four cap.
Right.
Your six cap is when something is not optimal. Maybe it's a very good tenant, but not a great tenant. Maybe it's a B location and not an A location. Maybe it's 8 years instead of 15 or 20 years. As your criteria becomes a little less optimal, that's when you can get a higher rate of return. And there's a happy medium in there when you can make projections and predictions of what will likely be successful, and you don't have to go to the perfect everything. Mm-hmm. And that's really what is the sweet spot where most of my transactions happen, which is around a 5 cap, 5 to 5.5%. Sometimes my clients want ultra safe and we do the 4 cap property. Sometimes they want a little higher return and they're willing to take a little more risk, and that's our 6 cap property.
Right. Yeah. And that makes sense. And even, you know, comparatively speaking to other commercial real estate investments, I would assume that, these still fall, you know, much lower on the risk spectrum, you know, than a, either a, you know, a value add class C multifamily property or something like that, where you're heavily dependent on a turnaround and that sort of thing. So, I mean, if you can still get a 6 cap and really put no work into it, that's not all bad. So I think that's pretty great. What happens to these properties? Because I know, correct me on this if I'm wrong, but like people like Walgreens, I don't believe that they own the underlying real estate. Is that right?
Very few properties of that they own very few properties that they lease.
Or
that
right. And I've seen, you know, Walgreens kind of pull back its footprint some and just seen doors close. You know, they just one day say, all right, we're, you know, we've got two Walgreens within a mile and a half of each other and we're going to close one of them. What happens to the owner of that property now that, and especially with a company like Walgreens, you know, it has a very, very definite building. You can always tell what a Walgreens was. So it has a very definite building profile. What does an owner do with that building? What does Walgreens do with it? I mean, do they continue to pay for the 20 years they have it and just said, hey, you know, that's just the cost of doing business, or walk us through that?
Great question. And let me answer it in a few different ways. When Walgreens signs a lease, all Walgreens leases are corporate, which means they're corporately obligated, unless they're bankrupt, to fulfill 100% of that lease. So if they sign a 20-year lease and after X number of years, they choose to vacate the property, it's called being dark. And a dark property means the lease is still in place and 100% of all lease obligations must be fulfilled while that lease is dark, or obviously while they occupy it. So taxes, insurance, and all maintenance still occur. Eventually, it goes from dark to vacant, which is why one of the three criteria I mentioned earlier is location. So Sam, if I said to you, can you picture a vacant Walgreens? You'd probably say no, or maybe one, but very few.
Sure.
And the reason why is they're usually in really good locations. So if it is a Walgreens and they do vacate, chances are it'll be repositioned into another use without much in between time. But there's also rural Walgreens, and those are more problematic to fulfill to the next use. So Walgreens is a great tenant, but we need to make sure it's a great location. I'm repeating what I said earlier, every tenant eventually vacates. And when that happens, you're left with real estate. Now compare this to any other asset class. The tenants just vacate sooner in other asset classes. And when the tenant vacates, whether it's an apartment, a shopping center, an office, or a single tenant triple net property, a Walgreens perhaps, what you're left with is the vacant property. And with that vacant property, you hopefully weren't overlooking the importance of location. And if you have a strong location, chances are it'll be relatively easy to find a new tenant for that vacancy.
Right. And so let's say Walgreens goes vacant, and which I can think of actually a couple that I've known of. And then something like I've seen, what was that? It was like a, not a 1 minute clinic. I think that's CVS, whatever their brand of name. Maybe it was a local community clinic of some sort goes in there. Is that Walgreens repositioning that typically? Because, you know, they're going to have a 20 or 25 year lease on it. Or is that the owner then repositioning? Because I guess as the owner, if you have this long-term lease in place and they're taking care of maintenance, they're taking care of taxes and insurance. I mean, you don't care if it's occupied or not.
Well, it's better if it's occupied. Here's what happens. If Walgreens chooses to vacate a property while the lease is in place, they have a whole leasing division that will sublet the property. They'll find another tenant. They'll do all the leasing. They will coordinate everything for the repositioning. They also might offer you a buyout. If there's 10 years left, they might offer you 5 or 7 years of prepaid income just to be released of that property. And it could be a big windfall for the landlord.
Right. And I guess you help your owners do the present value of those future cash flows and say, okay, let's get out our calculator and figure out what that's worth in today's dollars to take that buyout.
You bet. Let me give you another example. I sold a number of years ago a Burger King, and Burger King, when the lease expired, they chose not to renew. And when that happened, I called a leasing broker that I knew in that market, and the leasing broker quickly had Chipotle and Starbucks in a bidding war for that soon-to-be vacant Burger King.
Wow. Wow, that's great.
Fortunately, it was in a really nice location. Back to location, location, location. It's not just the lease, and it's not just the tenant. It's location, too. It's a combination of all the attributes.
Right, yeah. And that it sounds like that even plays an even greater importance in your business. Even, you know, typically you hear that when it comes to residential real estate, but for you, that's of even greater degree of importance. Tell me, in 2020, what of your tenants have you seen perform the best? I'm just curious, because this year, I think we can all describe one word I like to use, uncertain. So what have been your winners and losers in 2020 in the triple net retail, commercial retail space?
This year, it's easier to answer this question this year than any other year. Restaurants with drive-throughs are just golden right now. If you have a McDonald's, a Chick-fil-A, an In-N-Out, Taco Bell, you can go down the list. If you have a drive-through and you're well located in this germaphobe, don't want to be in public scenario, and I don't blame anybody for not wanting to catch COVID, the Outback Steakhouse, the Denny's, the IHOP, the restaurants that don't have a drive-through, that have a dining room that used to be really appealing, is really out of vogue and out of safety right now.
Wow. Have those tenants asked for any form of relief from their owners on a national level?
Some of them have. You bet. When COVID first came out, it was common for certain tenants to ask for some type of rent relief. And I wrote an article to my clients that explained how to do a give and a take. If you choose to give a rent concession, get a take. So if you were to give 3 months of postponed rent, make sure you get it back in 2021. If you give a concession, maybe get a lease extension.
Mm.
Or if there's something in the lease that you'd like changed, if it's a double net lease and there's some type of obligation for the landlord, convert it to a triple net. Some landlords said, no, I'm not giving any rent concession. And I don't know a single one where the tenant didn't continue the lease on schedule and on payment. But for landlords that were agreeable to make adjustments, some just gave an adjustment and the tenant gave a really reasonable and kind offer of how it'll be fulfilled. But I gave guidance too of how to make sure that if you give, you get a little back too.
Right, which is why it's so important to have someone like you on our team as owners, especially if these were assets that were purchased for people explicitly looking for a hands-off investment. We don't know how to structure those things. You know, it's going to be something where I'm going to say, what's the right thing to do here, Alan? So that's key that you're available in giving that sort of guidance along the way, because you kind of see what's happening on a national level.
I do. I also know the attorneys that specialize in these triple net properties. And when it comes to the lease amendments, I connected my clients with specific attorneys that have this specialty to make it legal and binding.
That's awesome. Alan, let's jump into the final four. If you were to give one piece of advice to an investor who is looking to get into triple net leases, and you said, hey, or triple net properties like what you sell, what's one piece of advice you would give to them out of the gate? Said, hey, go do this. What would that one piece of advice be?
Make sure your broker represents you and not the seller.
There it is. That's a golden nugget. Make sure your broker represents you. Yeah, because I think you can probably oftentimes feel like the seller's broker is your friend or someone that's on your team. And really, like you said, I think early on the podcast, that they have a fiduciary responsibility to their seller, not you. That's awesome. Secondly, what's one thing you do to stay on top of your game?
I am in touch with my clients frequently, and I'm in touch with the broker and developer community, where I guess that's two things, but I know the inventory and I know what my clients want, and I really marry them together nicely.
That's awesome. When it comes to giving back, what's one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
I do as much as I can. I give to various charities. I speak with people when they're down. I do my best to give. In fact, I just dropped a check in the mailbox this morning for a very valuable cause to me.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
My website is 1031tax.com, 1031tax.com. My toll-free number, 800-454-0015. In addition, I wrote the book on triple net property. I literally wrote the book. So on my website, you can download a free copy. If you're a potential client, I'll mail you a copy. Other brokers use this as their training manual for how to get people in the industry. And I encourage that because when they use it as a training manual and I call them, they know me and it's a really easy introduction. And when I say I have a good buyer, they recognize and appreciate it. So this is a great book for anyone, buyers, brokers, anybody who wants to really understand triple net property. If you don't want to call me, read the book and you'll learn about triple net property. If you go to the website, I can add you to my list where we show available triple net properties. And every day I send new properties to my buyers. If you want it less frequently, we can do it once a week or once a month. But I'm very hands-on. I'm very easy to find. And I hope to help as many buyers as possible buy these single tenant triple net lease properties.
That's awesome, Alan. Thanks for sharing that again. That's 1031tax.com. So you can find Alan and his contact info. Get on there, download his book. I know I will be because I'm always looking to learn, and that sounds like a great, and I'm always looking to learn, especially when there's great free resources out there. So Alan, thanks so much for jumping on today. I certainly appreciate it, and I look forward to doing this again sometime soon.
Sam, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.